Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is the Best Hang Podcast featuring Max Kerman, Shane Cunningham, and I am Mike Bierman. Welcome to the Best Hang Podcast. I'm here with Shane in person, and we are looking at a Zoom of Max Kerman. What are you doing? Are you laying on the ground? Are you up against the wall? I don't know what you're doing.
No, I'm sitting on a front porch right now. I forgot the keys to get back into the house where I'm staying. I'm in Los Angeles, California, and I don't know what accent that was. That was weird. trying to do accent work.
It was good. I feel like every other episode we get a good Max accent. There's lots going on for our listeners. It's been a minute, but we're back. We're excited. We got a new show out. Like Max said, he's down in LA doing all sorts of stuff. We'll get to the bottom of that. And we got lots to discuss. So what do we want to start with, fellas?
We're talking bulges, guys. We're talking about, there's no other way to start this episode but talk about bulges, because I missed the premiere. I want to hear all about the premiere in Hamilton because I was in Los Angeles, and the show is out. It's streaming on Crave. You can watch it. It's a TV special. You know, it's 26 minutes of comedy that you have created and our friends have helped make. And it's a real family affair. You know, Nathan did the photography for the poster. Mark Myers directed it. You guys wrote it and created it. Talk about it.
Max, you have an original song on there that, you know,
we
have a lot of our Kells fans that listen to this very podcast, and they should rush to Crave and stream right now. If you want to hear Max Kerman not only do the theme song off the top, but maybe a little reprise at the back end with some sweet vocals. Mm-hmm.
That song brought some people to tears in the end scene. I think a lot of people were expecting it to be kind of a gross out show, of course, it being a spinoff from our show, The Dessert, which maybe people didn't expect to be a gross out show, which some people might have accused it of being. So then Bulges, people think, oh, this is going to be really out there. But it's actually kind of a subdued show in many ways, and I think caught some people off guard. And Mike's own wife, Danica, was seen crying at the end of the show.
During the screening, she said that she shed tears. And that's a testament, I think, to the storytelling, the directing, Shane's acting, and Max, your song, which really hits hard in that last scene. It has become one of my favorite scenes because I think of what all of the things do in concert with one another. You know, so the thing about making a TV show, it all comes together in certain moments. And I think fortunately, this show has a lot of those moments, which is really, really great. But enough fucking platitudes. All we're saying is go stream it. If you listen to this podcast, we'd really appreciate it. And we're hoping for big things. However, the screening, as we were saying.
Oh, for an hundred lot. All I have are platitudes. The screening seemed to go very well. I don't know. Maybe people are just kissing her ass. But we did do a screening for The Dessert in Hamilton, which I thought went as well as it could, like very, very well.
This was back last summer.
Yes, this was in, I think, June.
Yep.
And this, I think, went even better. I don't know. Maybe it was a better crowd. Maybe it's a better show. But I just felt like everyone truly loved it. And Max, I know you're in LA right now with Matt Unsworth, who was one of the contributors to Bulges and a writer on The Dessert. So he might be giving you the full skinny on how it actually was, what he actually thought. Are you able to share anything that he's told you?
Oh, he loved it. He says packed theater, huge laughs. It was fucking awesome. Yeah, he did mention that the Ubers cost him $250 to go back and forth between Hamilton.
Oh, he Ubered
for the show.
There in the rain?
He Ubered. Yeah, he did. No, but he fucking loved it. And, you know, I was talking to your bro about it, Mike, because I don't know how much Greg watched The Dessert, which is hilarious to me because he's your best friend, Shane, and your brother, Mike, and all of his friends worked on the show. And Greg goes, yeah, sketch comedy's not for me. So I didn't watch all of it. I'm like, how did you not watch all of the show? But he did say that Bulges was amazing. He said, you know, what did he say? He wrote down some notes.
Well, to preface this, though, Max, Greg is by far, in our friend group, our toughest critic. You know, he does not fuck around really, and he'll sort of either not say anything or he's just very, you know, he's the one you worry about the most.
You know? He's disarmingly authentic, we could say, or alarmingly sometimes if you're on the, you know, bad end of that.
You know, it's funny, actually, I forget how this came up the other day. By the way, I'm sitting outside on a front porch, you might hear like a dog barking and other shit in the background here. But I was talking about Greg's cynicism the other day because we were talking about the concept of taking a dog out to a farm or a cat out to a farm. Actually, I was talking to Unsworth because Unsworth was like, we're going to have to take this cat out to a farm if the cat like doesn't stop shitting all over the place and stuff. And I was telling the story about how as like a child, Mike, like a year after the dog had been taken to a farm in Calgary, you asked Greg, do you think the dog got taken to the farm in Calgary? And then Greg just like doesn't even look from the TV. Nope.
That's a classic
makes
Greg
me laugh.
Moment.
Great. But anyway, so Greg goes, I said, didn't you not watch The Dessert? He goes, I watched a few episodes of The Dessert. I don't love sketch shows. I want story. So I like Bulges a lot. I'm a fan of Shane. It's the most Shane half hour of television ever. He gets a few 20-year-old jokes in there. The humor and beats are up my alley. And he was like, yeah, this is totally of Shane and all the sensibilities. And this is, and so he's super proud of it. Full swing. Love it. So,
very sweet of Greg to really dig it. And you know, you say you're saying, I think you're going to say he posted a nice thing on Instagram, which is also, you know, him being publicly demonstrative is not very much, you know, it's real nice. You know, it's even bringing out the heart in good old cynic Greg.
Well, and what I want to say was, you know, when we hung out a few weeks ago in Toronto, we were talking about how the show is actually kind of weirdly sweet. You know, it's like actually as ridiculous the premise is, it's a very sweet show. And like the sort of the love stories that are happening between the different characters are quite real. And, you know, I thought it was worth saying that and also talking about how hard you guys worked on the show. Because, again, it's a crazy show. But is this the hardest you've ever worked on anything?
Well, I think we worked really hard. And unfortunately, when it comes to creative work, whether it's good or bad, the amount you work is usually very close and similar.
Yeah.
The Dessert was probably the most impossible thing that we've ever worked on collectively. I would think everyone would agree with that. And because of that, it made Bulges a little bit more doable. So sometimes a big challenge would come up, like a near impossible challenge. And all of us would just say, at least it's not The Dessert. You know, like we can do this. We've already done this. We've proven we can do it. So I think newcomers to the project were kind of like, what the fuck are these guys doing? Whereas we were just like, this is all we've ever known. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of used to it by now and nothing can break us. That being said,
there's a quiver in your voice when you said break us.
I am broken right now. I was just going to say that. I'm like, I can never do this again. I don't think anyone's willing to go through this again. It is hell too. I think Mark Myers is broken. I think a lot of us, you know, we've cashed all the checks that our butts have written, and now it's time to live a little bit more comfortably. And I think it will ultimately serve the comedy if we can do things more comfortably. Because, yeah, I do think this was an achievement, and I think we can achieve more without killing ourselves as much.
That, well, you should be very, very proud. It's very, very funny. It's so well executed. Obviously, you know, everybody is pulling their weight in a thousand different ways and going above and beyond any one role designation. So it's, yeah, pretty amazing. More of that, please. Just more yeah. You guys making stuff, you know?
Bruce McCullough kissed me on the lips at the after party.
Did he? What did Bruce say?
I don't
say?
Think he was served a single drink, too. Well,
what did Bruce say about the show? Give us the Bruce, because Bruce is an EP on the show.
He was feels, nice.
What did he say?
He's obviously such a professional live performer. So the Q&A, every single utterance that he said was just murdering. With this audience, like he is
funny, insightful. Like every time he answered one of the questions at the Q&A after, it was, like Shane said, he just sort of like, yeah, he just was like wanted to listen to Bruce speak.
Mm. And but he was also very kind to point out like there were certain things that Bruce maybe thought wouldn't play in the show that we kept in anyway, because Mike was huge in the fact that there were some jokes that I almost felt like, oh, maybe this is too much just for us. And Mike was like, no, hey, we like MacGruber. We like this stupid style of comedy. It's not for everybody. Let's keep it in. And if we're going to, you know, fail, let's fail on our own terms or succeed on our own terms. So we kept in some steak stuff, and people who have seen the show will know what we're talking about. That could have easily been cut, but we kept it in, and the steak stuff murdered.
Mm.
And, you know, Bruce had suggested maybe taking some of that out, but Bruce also suggested adding a dance scene, having a rival restaurant part that was so crucial to the show. So Bruce was very good at praising us for keeping the things that we were passionate in and also listening to his suggestions that also did very well. So yeah, Bruce was complimentary in that regard and was glad that we kept what we kept and added what we added.
The dance scene was very pivotal. That was a huge scene.
That's sort of, I know, Max, like you love to, the way that like groups work together and things come together in creative collaboration. And that's sort of a great example of Bruce, you know, doing the table read at Bruce's house and all this, which you and Ash were at, you're obviously EPs on it. And it was like, just sort of like bandying around what works, what doesn't work. Bruce, in some initial meetings with us, he's got such a good sense of like sort of like beats that need to be hit in order to tell a story in a sitcom style. And again, this is expanded of like 30 minutes from a 2-minute sketch, right? And I think a lot of what Shane was talking about, the idea that like we killed ourselves to make it, in some ways we wanted to prove that maybe we could do like tell a story that's a little longer than a 2-minute sketch, which is a way different format, you know, and for someone like Mark to direct a long format sort of story, because he's obviously done incredible music videos and all sorts of stuff or some reality TV stuff back in the Much days. But this is like a different thing that we're all like, can we do this? It's a really hard thing to do, but the challenge is exciting, but it's hard to get people to sort of believe in you and let you make something like this because it costs a lot of money. And if it doesn't work out, everyone kind of looks not great. You know, there's that old saying, success has many parents and failure is an orphan. It's like, you know, and this is a big sort of hat tip. We talk about him a lot on this podcast, to the Podfather, Justin Stockman, because he's the guy that sort of let us make the dessert. He let us make Micah Much in conversation with. And then obviously now with Bulges, it's been great. And so in making it, having a conversation with someone like Bruce McCullough, he's like, hey, have you thought about this? What if it's all leading up to something like the big dance at the end? You need like a rival to add some tension. Maybe Trent feels like he needs to go somewhere. And those story beats ended up playing huge and elevated the whole thing. And we're just grateful that we have someone like Bruce in our corner. Actually, since we're giving out praise, I got to say, huge creative suggestion early on in the process is this was originally, it was all shot in Hamilton. Originally, it was just going to be Hamilton. It was going to be a Hamilton restaurant called Bulges. And one, Max Kerman suggested, hey, what if we put it in Niagara Falls, which is this weird sort of place where a restaurant like this might actually exist? That was a conversation we had with Shane. So maybe you guys can speak to that. Because I remember when Shane was like, hey, Max, what do you think about this? Max said this. I was like, that's fucking, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, one, Max and I, we just kind of randomly met up one day and had a long walk where we talked about Bulges.
Did you guys run into each other?
We just ran into each other. Yeah. And I kind of saw Max leaving a hotel and I was like, should I not be seeing this? But it was a total like, you know, kosher thing that was going on. So then once he spotted me, we talked about it. We went on a walk And we just talked about bulges the whole time. And everything Max said, I listened to, like things he responded to. Like he'd be like, yeah, that'll work. But how about this? You know, in his own Max way. And casting one day, Max and Ash called with casting suggestions.
Yes.
And I listened to those right away. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. The second they said it, I was like, oh, yeah, of course. Yes. This makes sense doing that. Like just the type of characters, who to cast in which spots. And I thought that all made perfect sense. But yeah, there was so many outside people who contributed to this. My father-in-law contributed a lot. My mom even, there's one joke about people in, anytime somebody has died, they're shown in a casket. And that's a joke my mom came up with. So we included that in a couple scenes. So that's kind of like
huge laughs. At
yeah,
the
which got huge laughs because I was worried. I was like, this is kind of a weird joke. It might not get laughs, but it definitely did. And I was able to tell that story at the Q&A, which was kind of nice to have my mom in a bit of the show. But yeah, definitely. I forgot what the initial question was, but yeah, there was Niagara Falls. That's huge. Cause, and Max called and he said, even after he saw a screener, he's like, make Niagara Falls more of a character in the show.
This is Ash's idea. Actually, I got to give Ash that. Ash was like the interstitials.
Shout out, yeah. Ash.
Isn't it
I like crediting the messenger though.
me too. Believe me.
but yeah, we did take that advice and it elevated it a lot. Just like one or two shots you think wouldn't make that much of a difference, but it totally makes the show feel way more Niagara Falls centric.
And moves the story along better. You have a nice break in between scenes where we're at the falls or at this place, but that's a note that came from you guys after an early edit, you know, and then the show becomes what it becomes.
It's so crazy with these kinds of projects where you're like, you start with a kind of a simple idea. And I'm so naive. Anybody who's done this a lot probably knows this is a stupid thought, but like you start with a very simple idea and you go, oh yeah, it just kind of writes itself. It's great. Bulges, you know, it's funny. It's like there's some guys and you write a story and then, but once you start getting into it, it's an endless amount of work, like endless. Like if you didn't have to hit the deadline that you did, you guys could still be talking about it and arguing about each.
Well, we'd definitely still be mixing it. Like we'd be working on the audio. We'd probably still be in an edit. Like there were a lot of like things leading up to sort of the finish line and whatever, you know, not to get too deep in the weeds in our process, but like kind of like the final sort of last 2 days of editing was like Shane, myself, Pops and Myers, like in a basement, my basement, you know, my kids would come down, we'd get some food and we were kind of getting it to the finish line. And then the mixing was again, the four of us like for multiple days in this studio. And it's like, yeah, it's a lot of work, but you know, and I know we're giving out our flowers here. I want to give some out to Jonathan Popolis as well. You know, he's writing on this thing. He's in it. So if you want to see him in the thing, he's back there banging pots and pans in the kitchen. He's one of the kitchen guys and just like editing, like all of these things that sort of people do to contribute. John is obviously at the top of the list. And I feel like sometimes just because he's such like a, he's just part of the group. So you don't necessarily say his name, but I want to say it on this podcast.
Oh, he's the most underrated guy in the world. He has unlimited bandwidth. The things he did for this show are insane. I don't think the show, like it wouldn't even exist if he wasn't involved. So Popolis is, we're lucky to have him. Like I've never met anyone like him. He's kind of similar to Mark Myers in the sense that he'll just work forever at a very high, unfathomable level. That because I'm the exact opposite, where I have like a 4 hour bandwidth every day. And once that's used up, I'm simply done. Like I just have to go to bed at 8 p.m. every night or I'm screwed, unless I'm running on pure adrenaline, like at the final stages of the show, then I can kind of stay up very late. But I really appreciate people like Mark and Pops who can operate at a high level on very little sleep and still 100%. Be just as good.
Well, Shane, I called you the other day and we were talking about something else, but you kind of brought up the fact that you've had these very intense life partners over the course of your entire life, where it's like, whether it's a girlfriend or a best friend, it's like you're tied at the hip with somebody, you know, for a finite period of time often. And it's like, you are married to that person. And obviously you're married to Alex. So this is not to make Alex jealous.
Yes.
I'm not trying to make Alex jealous here because I know she can get a little jealous. No, but but with Pops on the show, he was like your, but you've had this with Mark Myers. You've had this with Bert. You've had this with other friends.
Well, I have it with Mike too. Yeah. At work, I'm married to Mike. People know Mike's the only person I talk to in this building. I don't think I've uttered a word to anyone else in this building in the last 7 years. So I definitely like that. They're my support crutch people. I don't talk to many people in day to day, and I'm like 50% of a person. I need that other half to operate, and I need to rely on you for everything, because in a lot of ways I'm incompetent as a person.
Me too.
And that's the truth.
That's like me and Ash.
Yeah,
it's true.
But in some ways, you know, I'm good. I'm definitely good in some ways, but I just, bandwidth is something I struggle with, and I need a lot of help in day-to-day life.
Well, you should be very proud. Everybody watch that damn show. It's fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my father-in-law. If we're just giving out everything, this will be the last thing I'll say about it. My father-in-law, it was his idea to pitch it as a full show. Mm. And my cousin-in-law, too, they both kind of were like, this could be a show. I could see this being a full series. Shane, you have to pitch it. And it worked. So, yeah, full credit to them. And was even able to get my father-in-law in a very small role, but with big impact in the show itself, playing my dad.
He was great.
So that was very cool.
Huge moment in the theater too for John Lamparski, who was a listener of this pod. So shout out to John, because he killed that scene.
This is why it's important, if you are a creative person and you have some ideas, you just have to start talking about it out loud. Just talk about it to anybody who will listen. Just be like, I'm thinking about doing a thing, because you'll get a bunch of feedback. Some of it will be useless, but some of it will be really, really good. So the fact that like all these creative conversations just by bringing it up with your father-in-law, with me, with whoever, you know, it helps shape it and for the better. And I always think that a lot of people have great ideas that are living in them, but don't have the instinct to just like talk about it out loud. And when you're missing out if you're not talking about it loud, because there's people that are giving free advice away all the fucking time. Do you know what I mean? There's so many good free ideas out there if you just ask somebody. And
100%.
Yeah, I think that's important.
Well, this kind of gets back to something we talk about in a lot of endeavors, is it's like you'll see somebody accomplish something and you go, oh man, that's such an obvious idea. It's kind of not the hard part coming up with the idea. It's like doing it. Mm-hmm. Like, because nobody wants to actually do it. It's like you'll see somebody become a TikTok star. You'll see somebody become, they'll succeed at whatever field they're in or whatever. And you go, oh man, it's like, I could do that. It's like, then do it. Like, the hard part's actually doing it and like committing to it for an extended period of time, not doing one or two podcasts, doing 2 years of podcasts, whatever that is. If it's podcasts, if it's whatever your field is or what you're interested in, going through the stages where it's embarrassing, because ambition in and of itself is kind of embarrassing. Yeah. Like, if you're, especially if it's a forward facing thing, it's like, hey, do you want to like come out and see like my band, or I'm working on a TV show. It's like, okay. It's like, until it becomes a thing. Like, I always think about, like, imagine if you're starting the Spice Girls or like a boy band. It's like, it's the lamest shit in the world until you actually become wildly successful. But the point is, it's like, it's the pursuit of anything that's forward facing is kind of fraught with indignities, because it's kind of like, it's like, how do you even measure success? Obviously being on Crave is something that helps with the sort of story and people will see the work, but it's the execution or actually sticking with something that's like the kind of the hard part, in my opinion.
Yeah. Just being on Crave, whether people watch it or not, to me, that's successful. Like, it exists.
Yeah. Yeah. And if this is all it ever is, we're really proud of this 30 minutes or 26 minutes. What did it end up at? 29?
28? Yeah. It's about 29 minutes.
So it's like, you know, we're really proud of this piece and that exists in the world. And I think that's kind of the way you got to approach like any of these things.
I completely agree. And it's so funny. I think about this a lot, because the times I'm probably most unhappy is when I'm thinking about what other people think of me or where I stack up in compared to my peers, or if I feel like I'm as far along in my career path as I ought to be. Like, don't get me wrong, there's sometimes I can be in a good mood and go, oh my God, I'm so happy that we're doing this cool shit, or we get an offer to play a cool show and I'm like feeling good about myself. But most of the time it's like, I wish we were a little further ahead, or I wish we had a chance to do that. And that's just natural. Like, I think any artist, regardless of their size, like, can go down those rabbit holes. But the times I feel best is when you're just doing the thing, when you're working on something.
Yeah.
There's nothing better. And every time I'm miserable, I go, just work on something. Just work, call somebody who will help you through the creative problem that is right in front of you, and you'll feel better. And, you know, Mike, I called you a couple weeks ago, and Ash and I called you because we had a word riddle that we wanted help on. And you're, of course, one of our guys. You're like the guy that we call for this kind of situation about like, okay, how do we're workshopping some like copy and how do we figure out what's the best and coolest thing to say? And we spent an hour on the phone with you, Mike, like laughing our fucking faces off. And I don't even know if we came up with the answer, but it didn't fucking matter.
What's the word riddle? I'm so curious.
It was a good time.
We can't say it on air.
It's a Max thing, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, you can help for sure, Shane. We haven't found the answer yet, but it was
you
honestly
know Max always has like five projects he's simultaneously working on. Right. I feel like, and so it was one of Max's many projects that hopefully the public will see.
Yeah, but honestly, it was the best part of my entire day. It was the best part of the week calling you, Mike, and just laughing with you about it and feeling like we're getting something, getting somewhere, like the back and forth. And so yeah, that's the only antidote to any of the ego stuff that we're talking about here, about like how people receive it, what people think of it. It's like, no, you fucking make the thing, you try your hardest, you learn a bunch of lessons, and then you go make, and then you go make the next thing. Then you just go make the next thing. Like you start thinking about the next thing. You don't have to be like in production, but you can start diligently writing down ideas and having conversations and collecting good thoughts and putting them into your own work.
I think we spoke a bit about this too at the screener on Thursday, but it's like, I think the heart of it, and we've talked about this before, is it's like getting with the right people that you want to make things with. And that's the hardest thing. Mm-hmm. So if you're listening to this and you're in creative work or any work really, and you're like, oh, I want to start something up, or whether it's a band or whatever, make TV, whatever that is. It's like, if you get with the right amount, like the right people that you actually like being around, then when it gets hard, it actually almost weirdly turns into a fun thing. Cause it's like, I think about it all the time, like when we're sitting there and it's like 1 a.m. and we've been in a room for 12 hours in an edit, even if things, there's tension or there's some, you know, the debate about some edit or some joke or whatever. The fact that we like love each other and can literally turn a tense moment in 2 seconds into one where we're laughing.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Really fucking hard. That's like the heart of it.
Oh, I remember in your basement, it was like 2 a.m. Things were getting a little tense, but John had brought up that he was a tuba player in high school.
Yes.
And Mike started grilling him about his like sexual history in high school. It's like, oh, did you lose your virginity in high school? And Pops was like, is indignant. He's like, of course I did. I was a tuba player. So but we couldn't stop making fun of the idea that the tuba player was the coolest guy. So anytime things got really tense and Mark's like, guys, I need to go home right now, we would just make a joke about his tuba player exploits. And it really... I don't think if we weren't close friends, I don't think we'd be able to have humor like that, but it was just so memorable to me and fun.
And that's it, Max. You know, it's a call to, you know, it's like laughing with you and Ash on the phone. Like that's the best part of creative work, is when you enjoy the people you're around while you're also sort of getting something accomplished.
And the other thing too, and it's fun, it's always really fun being down here in LA and I'm getting lots of kind of creative work done, but you see a lot of people who kind of have to be mercenaries in their jobs, even in a creative industry, where they're just kind of chasing something that might be popular in the moment, and that's how they're paying the bills, and that's what they got to do. And I totally understand it, and I respect it. But when I'm asked like what I want to do, I'm like, I only want to do shit with my friends. I don't really care about projects that are outside of like ideas that I have or ideas that my friends have. And this is not to say that we can't collect more friends. Like, of course, like, you know, let's make lots of friends, you know, and the friends group doesn't have to be three people. It can be a large network, but it's like you own the stuff that you want to do, especially creatively. It's like kind of only worth it if it's like with people that you love and that you want to share the experience with. Just knowing that it's all just about the experience. It's like you want to make something that you're proud of, but like because it's all about the experience, you want to experience it with people that you love.
Are you able to divulge why you're in LA right now, or is it just kind of a good creative place to hang out while you're fiddling around doing things you'd be doing in Canada?
No, it's a good question. No, we, our Kells are always thinking about new music. We're not recording anything down here, but there's just like new music people that were like producers and, you know, writers and just other talented people that maybe we'll want to work with. And there's some babies being had in our band. in the next couple months. So not
Max, every- congratulations. Thank you. This is how we have to find out.
Guys, I'm here to tell you.
Children in LA.
I'm going to be a father. And
wow.
No, Mike and Tony have kids.
Go. I like that babies are being, congrats to Mike and Tony, by the way. Actually, I was just with Mike and Molly on Saturday night. And they're due very soon.
They are.
It's funny how when the babies are imminent, Max gets the hell out of town.
It's classic me. Yeah. Every Hamilton dad.
Like, how do you handle this? Do you give gifts? And if so, what does that look like when the baby comes out? Or is that not your style? Or do you have someone handle that for you?
I guess we've only had two babies in the band so far. I don't think, did I send any? I don't know. I couldn't tell you if I sent anything. I don't remember. I kind of don't care, to be honest, but very happy. I will be going to the baby shower on Saturday, though. Mike and Molly's baby shower.
We'll be there.
And you're going to be there.
Yeah, of course. Wouldn't miss it for the world.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So I'm staying with our friends Tim and Jess, and Tim, of course, is a celebrated comedy writer himself. He's written on The Office and MacGruber and Last Man on Earth, and Jess is a writer herself. She's making movies. She's writing stuff. They're just like super fun couple. They live in Silver Lake, and it's fun being here because you're sort of at ground zero for the music industry. Like every music producer that you like or care about is just sort of like wandering around here. It's kind of like the Ossington of LA. It's on like the east side, and there's just tons of creative people that are working around here. And I went for a meeting with this guy who's a producer, had a coffee with him, and he's worked on a bunch of Beck stuff. And so I was asking him like 100 questions about what it's like to work with Beck. And he had lived basically in Beck's house in Malibu, and was just like, just sort of, I was so fascinated with, you know, Beck's career to begin with and very curious to know what it's like to work with him, et cetera, et cetera. And so it was just really interesting to learn about that experience. And then 10 minutes later, there's a guy, we're sitting on the patio of a coffee shop, and there's a guy behind him. I'm like, that guy kind of looks like Beck. And of course it was Beck. And then Beck came over.
God.
We got to talk to Beck.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
You talked to Beck?
Yeah, we talked to Beck he gave my guy like a big hug. And they caught up, and I tried to insert myself in the conversation. I was like, we actually worked with this guy, Tony Hoffer, who knows you because you guys did a record. He's like, oh yeah, Tony. He lives in Texas now, right? I'm like, yeah, yeah. He's like, anyway, and the conversation carried on. I don't think he was that interested in that factoid that I offered.
Still cool.
Yeah, still cool. And then he also, because I saw him at Bud Stage this past summer with Phoenix. And he was like, oh yeah, like Phoenix really had the crowd that night. That band's amazing. So we talked about that. He was just in Brazil doing at a festival. He's talking about like Brazilian music.
Did he look cool?
Yeah, of course he looked really cool. And then
like big brim hat or normal style?
No hat. I don't think I think he had a baseball hat on. Yeah, he had a baseball hat on.
Okay.
And then I left and I walked up the hill to go back to Tim and Jess's place. And I saw this like redheaded guy who was sort of like 20 feet in front of me walking up this really steep hill. I was like, that guy looks so familiar. And it turned out it was Ariel Rushdight. And that is the producer of Haim and Vampire Weekend and a bunch of other like really cool like indie stuff. And I've thought about Ariel Rushdight for a long time. And then I watched him go right into his house. I was like, oh, that's where he lives. He's got like a cool, like vintage Land Rover. And then 2 hours later, I saw the Land Rover driving around. And then the next night we were at this Italian place with Unsworth for dinner and he was there too. So it's just like, you're just kind of running into people all the time down here.
You got to start with Ariel Rushdight and then work up to Beck. You can't go Beck and then drop Ariel Rushdight and expect us to be excited.
Okay. But I will say, I know you guys are curious about my celebrity status down here.
Absolutely.
And on the plane, I was just getting off at LAX and a fan gave me a letter. Basically, there was a fan that was sitting right in front of me and she very politely was like, hey, I want you to have this letter. And then just walked off the plane because everyone was deboarding. And I was like, okay, cool. And so I'm kind of feeling good about myself. Probably a Canadian, but you know, it's nice to have an interaction down here. Do you want me to read you the letter?
Of course. Yes. It's a ransom letter.
Here we go. When I texted my husband to tell him you were sitting behind me, he suggested I call you a loser and a sellout to your face. But that's not really my style. Although I do think those things. I'm glad you and your band behave like rabid bigots in public. I'm sure there were many other artists who shared your opinion but stayed quiet. I will never know for sure who they are, but I know 100% who you are. I will never be refunded the thousands of dollars I've spent seeing you play live over the years. I can never undo bringing your music into my home and sharing it with my children, but I can turn off the radio whenever I hear your voice, which is exactly what I do now. Turn over. To me and many other X fans, your voice and its legacy will rest only in your contribution to damaging and dividing our country on a scale that I can never imagine. There are families who have been torn apart, friendships that will never recover, and it was people and bands like yours echoing that divisive message who played a major role. I don't have high hopes, but I hope you learn something from this. Do better next time.
Wow. It sounds like she prefers your earlier work, I guess. Eh?
Just big Jackson Square fan.
So she must.
What is the thing that she that remains unnamed?
It's the vaccine.
Vaccines?
Yeah, it's the vaccine.
That's it? Who gives a shit? Oh my God.
Well, the thing I wanted
that passionate about a vaccine.
You're on the plane. We're both on the plane. It's fine. Like the thing's kind of over, right? Like the world.
Wait, do you get mad at people if they don't get vaccinated? Did you get mad or were you just saying, hey, get vaccinated?
They were in a campaign. And so then fans feel like they probably played a role. If you're like a huge anti-vaxxer, you feel like that was some, you know, great injustice. So I guess them being part of the apparatus and the machine that was pushing the narrative.
No, that's exactly. And also, I think we had mandatory vaccine like for entrance to the
shows.
But I think that was law. I think that was just the law. I think if you wanted to go to any shows or if you wanted to go to like attend an event, you had to be vaccinated. So, and I think we gave that a thumbs up. We were like, and we like leaned into that probably a little bit. But I don't know if I kind of forget.
I don't know, man. Like if, so she's got children and like a husband, like a fan, but she's like traveling on her own. Like if I had alone time, I would not be taking the time to write such an angry letter. Like I'd be watching a movie. I'd be thinking about what I'm going to do. I grab some drinks. Like to hold that much inside you, that much anger.
Was
that
she
much
presenting as nice when she handed it to you?
Kind of. Yeah. She was like, hey, I want you to have this. And kind of smiled at me. And I was like, okay, cool. I'll read it later. No problem. Thank you.
It would have been awesome if you're like, oh, where are you headed? And you're staying in a similar place. You're like, let's share a cab. And you shared a cab and then read the letter. It would just make her feel terribly uncomfortable. Oh, man.
I know. That would have been very cool. I was a little shaken at first, but then it kind of made me want to just meet her a little bit more. Like some people are like, oh, weren't you pissed off about it? I'm like, no, not really. More just curious. As you say, she's still holding that resentment. And I'm curious. Yeah, I'm curious to know how I tore their family apart. But yeah, I don't know. It was definitely unexpected. Because usually all.
But isn't it kind of flattering that she still likes the music? What? I've listened to you for hundreds of thousands of hours.
No, it was thousands of dollars at shows.
Oh, spending thousands of dollars.
Yeah, like, she can't get so the money flattering. Back. Yeah. Would you offer to cut her a check to get her the money back?
I did put the note in the band chat. I took a photo of it. And one of our band members said, well, she's right about one thing. Hashtag no refunds.
That's good.
But my instinct is always to go the other way. Because I was thinking, I was like, okay, how much do we owe you? I don't care. Do you want $3,000? How much do you think you spent over the years? I don't want you to be upset.
Oh, yeah. That's your old Starbucks move with the 10 bucks, right? Yeah. When they wouldn't let you use the washroom.
I always want to just give people their money back.
Here's a $10 tip.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I always want to give people the money back and just be like, okay, if this bothers you so much, then just take it.
Would you be more insulted if they were like, listen, I hate your music. Every one of your fucking stupid songs make me ill. However, I think you're a hero for promoting the vaccine and you saved my family's life.
Someone wrote
that. Which letter
on
do you prefer?
Good question. That's a great question. What do I prefer? Probably the second one I'd probably prefer. If I save some lives, that's probably
really?
Yeah, more useful than...
Oh.
Yeah.
If someone was like, you're a piece of shit, Shane, you're stupid as hell, but goddamn, you're handsome. I'd be like, I'm handsome? Thank you. Like, I'd be so flattered if someone did that.
Man.
Yeah.
But what would that be?
But I don't know. Everyone's different.
You prefer to get this letter, right? Like the one where someone like really loves your
that
music,
one,
but thinks you're interesting. It's a good hypothetical.
Yeah. If someone's like, the Bulges was so fucking funny. It was hilarious. But your stance on the vaccine makes you a piece of shit. And therefore I'll never watch it again. I'd feel so satisfied. Wouldn't you, Mike?
Oh yeah. You want to be. Yeah. It's like, I think deep down, you'd probably want to be complimented for what you've done. Like the work, you know, your music, Max. And then if they got a problem with a very reasonable stance on vaccines, you know, it's like, I'd rather than like the work.
Yeah. I contemplated like posting it on our Instagram story or something. Cause I just think that'd be funny and people love that kind of stuff. But then I also thought, I was like, I kind of hate that, you know, like just where the internet has gone. When it comes to like picking fights, you guys agree with that, right? That I probably didn't need to talk about it on a podcast is funny, but this is different than like an Instagram post, obviously.
Yeah, I think a podcast is a perfect forum.
It's good. It's good. Yeah, I'm so outside of the realm. All I know is years ago, I promised myself I would never engage in like Facebook comments. Like, you know, you'd see someone would post some thought or story, whatever you want to call it. Like a what do you call it? Like when you put like a post, whatever.
Yeah, they do a post.
They'd say something, you know, and then someone would be like, argue it. And then under that, there'd be an argument. And then under that, you'd have this big chain of arguments, which I enjoy grabbing some popcorn and reading some argument between some old people in high school.
Mike Veerman is a piece of shit. I agree.
I would probably not engage.
Really?
I know. I just am like, don't. It's poison, man. It's poison. I'm so like, that was Facebook many years ago. But the policy has continued with me to Instagram and Twitter. I'm not on TikTok, so I like, but I'm just not a comments guy. And so like the whole idea of like taking that letter and then blasting it out publicly and then it would get all this engagement. I know the name of the game is engagement. I know I work in media, but I'm just, for me, it's not my, I can't live like that.
Did you get lured in though into something in the last year or something? I thought you came in and you're like, I never do this, Shane, but I got sucked in. I thought
maybe it was basketball related.
Yeah, it might have been
something basketball related. And I regretted it because I'm like, oh, I don't want people to see my argument in public and, you know, my argument tactics. You know, I got a real style when I'm going back and forth. I don't need to put that on public display. So anyway, not my scene. I think that you did the right thing by not posting it.
Yeah. I used to try to deliver more Twitter hot takes, you know, and I look back, just thinking about it, and it makes me cringe. Just being like, what? Wake up in the morning. And I still tweet a bit, but 90% of the things I think to tweet, I go, what's the point? I don't want to do it. And my Twitter as a result is kind of boring and bland and mostly just about like supportive, like ideas as opposed to like a hot take. And it seems like a very, like the only people left on the internet doing that are kind of crazy people, right?
I don't, if it's a means to engagement. I actually keep seeing these videos on Twitter that like people basically are trying to like get engagement by like you'll go up to like, there was this guy that went up to somebody in like a grocery store and they like, they're like, hey, can I ask you a question? And then they'll say something super insulting about the guy's girlfriend. And so they want, it's like they're trolling. It's like troll engagement.
Yeah.
And these videos are like, oh, is like that guy going to hit him? Is he going to do whatever? And you're just like, it's crazy that there's this world where you can monetize videos, like harassment videos, essentially for entertainment. And I'm just like, wow, that's kind of what's happening out there in the world right now.
Yeah. Curtis Connor, who's actually in our show, I was surprised, as big as he is, he still tweets and like regularly and kind of says like, not even a controversial joke, but something that I'm like, ooh, for as big as he is, I'd be a little scared to even put that out there. Like he just tweeted, it was something like, I want you to germy on my Allen till I white. But I'm like, wow, that's like funny. A good, clever joke and everything. And it like, it got a ton of retweets, but yeah. I'm like, as a 40-year-old man, like I'm clutching my pearls. How does he go to work in the morning? And I forget, like he doesn't have a 9-to-5. No. He doesn't have to worry about that. I guess if you really think about it, how could that go wrong? But I am impressed when somebody has that perfect cleverness where it's not really offending someone, but it seems like it's kind of racy and they're just in that right pocket, which I think Curtis Connor, he navigates that world amazing.
There's only one person on Twitter that, that can tweet like opinions on culture and politics, but like rides the line perfectly. And it's El Amin, host of CBC's Commotion.
Oh yes. He's so smart though.
He's so smart. Yeah. He's so fucking funny. He's like quite brave with his opinions, but tonally, it's always the correct spirit. You know what I mean? It's never sort of like bitchy or mean or unnecessarily bitchy or mean. Like it's always just, he nails it. Like we just, Ash just sends me his tweets all day long. I'm just like, he's the only guy who could do it the way he does it. You know, it's very, very impressive. Shout out to El Amin.
And I think he does have a kind of a corporate-y job. Like he's a personality, but he's owned by like a big company. So that's even cooler that he's able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's sort of one of a kind. Guys, let's wrap up real quick with a recap of the We Are the World documentary, Greatest Night in Pop Music History. We teased it the last episode, which was like a month ago.
We did.
Yeah. Mike, do you remember anything about the documentary?
Oh, it's been so long. All I would say is, I would say the reason I found the doc compelling, I think I kind of said it on the last pod. If there's anything we want to dig into, some real moments, but like, I just think that it is one of those, I think it's such a great doc because they filmed this thing in whatever it was, what, 1984 or something like that? Yeah. It's like, fine. To get all those big, big, massive artists in a room without their like their people, their managers, their agents, whatever. It's like they got in the room. Quincy Jones is like, this is the policy in the room, just the stars. And then the documentary crew and the engineers. And there's such a vulnerability to sort of these massive, massive stars that just would never happen today. No one would ever, like you would never have someone like Taylor Swift in the room like that completely with no say over what the documentary is going to be or how the footage is going to be used. They would all have like a stake or an interest in how it would sort of be presented and how they would come off. And Bob Dylan would have people that are like, oh, Bob looked really sort of indecisive and lost there. That's not a great look. Take it out of the doc. Well, it's been so long and whoever has the rights was able to just put whatever the fuck they wanted in this doc. And so I think there's an interesting sort of like study of how these huge stars sort of worked in group work, who's the leader in the room, who's sort of like the connector of people, like it all kind of gets revealed, you know, like, and I think that's the sort of value of this documentary.
Well, and I had watched it the day after we did the big dance scene for Bulges.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, it's so hilarious how something which seemingly seems simple, like doing a dance scene, I was relating to the difficulty of pulling that off and how they got like 38 of the biggest stars in the world all together in one room.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of similarities, even coming down to how some people in the dance routine, like there was one person who I obviously can't get too specific here, but he was like, I can't do this dance. It's going to be a disgrace. My family, I have to back out. And then I had to like go out and convince this man and come up with solutions on how to bring him back into the dance and pull it off. And at the end of that day, we felt like we just did the most impossible thing.
100%.
So I was living vicariously through Lionel Richie in this doc and just
pumping him up.
Like how calm he is able to be the whole time. He has the perfect personality and so much fucking talent Lionel Richie has, but he's almost egoless in a way. Like he had to do his bandwidth. Like he was fucking hosting the Grammys that night.
Yeah. The AMAs, the American Music Awards or whatever they were. Yeah. Well, this was kind of my huge takeaway from the doc. Well, my huge takeaway about Lionel Richie is the documentary starts, and I know Lionel Richie. I know he's like in the Commodores. I know, you know, hello. I know his hits, like three hits or whatever. Easy Like Sunday Morning is anyway. It's like
Lady in Red.
Did he do Lady in Red?
Didn't he?
I don't know. Anyway, we'll have to look that up. But Lionel is like this guy, but he's always felt like an ancillary star. Like, yeah, he's a star, but he's not like a star with a capital S. And so I saw that he was a producer, the main producer on this documentary. He's kind of doing most of the talking head stuff because the story really centers around Quincy Jones, him, and Michael Jackson sort of making this thing happen. And Stevie Wonder was involved too in the early stages. But Quincy's not a talking head in this. Michael's not with us anymore. And Stevie's not. So it's really left to Lionel Richie to tell the story. So I'm like, oh, we're going to get like the Lionel Richie version of events where he was a major, you know, it's like you maybe elevate in that of the four, though, you kind of Lionel might be the whatever. So I start watching this doc with a bit of that going in. Like, I'm like, oh, okay, I'll see this through Lionel's lens. But the more I watch Lionel Richie talk, like just in the talking head, the modern day retelling, I'm like, okay. And then it, like Shane said, he's hosting the AMAs and they show clips. I'm going, oh, he's not going to, how's it going to be? I'm watching the clips of the host. I'm like, fuck, he's a great host.
Oh, yeah.
Then you start watching the footage from 84 and you realize he is the glue in the room. He's the guy keeping it light. If he sees somebody's feeling a little nervous, he walks over and he's just, hey, how you doing? He's cracking jokes. I'm like, oh my God, I am becoming a massive Lionel Richie fan and I see your value, sir. I was not familiar with your game. And then at the end, when they wrap it up and Lionel talks about being in that room and what it meant to him and he gets emotional, I was like, I fucking love Lionel Richie.
Oh, you're kind of like our Lionel Richie, Mike, because I was thinking, like, if anyone who could in our group who could kind of pull this up, you too, Max, you could host the thing,
right?
Be kind of like a duck where you're seemingly calm, but underneath you'd be have so many gears spinning, but still pull it off without having a nervous breakdown and then be talking to all the people and calm and pulling it together. So, yeah. And then also the Bob Dylan part. I was relating to him because like Bob Dylan, you think is this massive talent, but his voice is kind of shit. So he's in a group with a bunch of people who can sing and actually know everything about singing and everything. And he just chooses not to sing. And there's a camera like seemingly an inch away from his face. It must have been a long lens, but he's having a miniature panic attack.
It's the big chorus.
And he just wants the moment to pass and like have no one look at him. And that to me was super relatable. I feel like I've been Bob Dylan in that scenario where I'm somewhere I shouldn't be with a bunch of talented people who are totally outclassing me. And I just want the 10 minutes to go by and just cut to the part where it's done. And then they had to build up his confidence and like Bob Dylan needs a pep talk. Lionel's like rubbing his shoulders like you can do it, man. Yeah. And Bob Dylan's like, how about like this? And he does it. And they're like, that was great. And they're like, do it like that. And then they actually got. Goes,
no, it wasn't. But OK, thanks.
Yeah. And they got and the Bob actually sang in that Bob Dylan weird way. And they got it out of him.
Well, the great part is so like Stevie Wonder, who at one point kind of brought them on a tangent and it was really funny. But Stevie, they say in this doc, is this amazing mimic. And so at one point, Stevie sits down on the piano and he starts doing an imitation of all the different people singing it. So Stevie's doing like his voice, which is very Stevie. And then he starts doing like a Bob thing. He's like, we are the world or whatever. And then when it's Bob's time to sing his isolated line, everyone did it in the room together. Bob's the only guy they clear the room for because clearly he was having this, what you were saying, this anxiety thing where he didn't want to do it around all these other people. But when he's standing at the mic, he's kind of like, hey, Stevie, Could you show me how you did it? Like he needed Stevie to show him his imitation of him so Bob could get the cadence of the lyric, of the melody. So it just was like really fun. And then he gets in and he kind of does his like, people forgotten. You know, he's kind of doing the thing in his Bob voice. But it's like, oh, he kind of needed Stevie to imitate him to show him how to do it. And all those little pieces are amazing and would never get on tape today.
Well, it was so awkward. And I love cringe humor and this wasn't really like humor, but I did find it kind of funny when Stevie's going off on a tangent, clearly in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And
he wanted them to add like Swahili. He wanted to add like a verse that was like,
yes.
Yeah. And then Bob Geldof has to come in and he's like, Well, Stevie, this song is really more for the audience, like the people that are going to be sending the money, not, you know what I mean?
And so, but Stevie's so talented. So that alone, it's hard to shut down a talented guy, but he also has this disability that makes it awkward to pipe in and you can't give him nonverbal communication to kind of put him down subtly. So Stevie just keeps going and going. I'm like, oh my God, this is like perfect, cringe, captivating humor. And it's such a moment to behold. And I had to look away from the screen and like so many things were going on. So it was one of those like almost immersive documentaries where I was getting up and I'd be like, yes, that's hilarious. Yeah. Or like when they succeed. It just was, it hit at the perfect moment. And you and I were watching it kind of in tandem.
Totally. Like, we didn't realize it until we started putting it in the group. I was like, I think I sent it to the pod room. I'm like, yo, this doc is... it's a banger. And then you're like, I am literally watching it right now.
I'm so glad you said that because another person in the Bulges cast was also watching it and they put out, this is the shittiest doc I've ever seen. Do not watch this, boring as hell. I was like, oh, at least Mike and I share that opinion. Yeah. But yeah. Did you liked it too, right?
I was thinking about you too. I was thinking about you. I was thinking about Ash. This is your business, this bread and butter, this like the group work, you know, people with big hits that are like in a room like this. What are you thinking the whole time you're watching? You must be thinking, what would I do in this situation?
Well, I think you're right about the Lionel character being a very rare kind of artist who's a genuine people pleaser and a leader. Like it felt like a lot of these guys were sort of temperamental, odd, super famous celebrities who like were kind of not in the mood to ever like take on that kind of role. So the fact that Lionel had that in him, I related to because he felt more like a camp counselor. And sometimes I feel like a camp counselor more than an artist. So I like that about Lionel a lot. Honestly, you could go through like each scene of this documentary and then like stop it and then talk about it because it was just like, you know, like the scene where Waylon Jennings leaves because he's like, no Southern boy ever sang Swahili, like amazing, you know, and then also like Ray Charles sitting down and kind of performing a better version of the song, like a gospel version of the song, because the song is kind of shit, right? Like, is the song good?
I don't know.
It works by the end. Like, I don't know if it's just an earworm or that thing where repetition, but I don't know. It kind of, someone's compared it to a jingle. Like it's more like a commercial jingle than like a
like
pop it.
Happy Birthday. Is that a good song or is it just an institution where we can't even judge it? And that's the, We Are the World. It's almost like a parody when I listen to it. It just feels so like ingrained in our culture.
It's easy for everyone. It's kind of like a lullaby thing though, where it's the chorus is anyone can sing, I think. And it's easy, you know, I don't know. But yeah, you're not a fan of the song.
No, I didn't love the song, but I did get impressed because Michael Jackson, I think I knew this before, but he doesn't really play any instruments, but he writes all the songs and he produces all the songs that he's a part of. So it's just like everything he does, just like, I kind of need to go like, he just sort of like beatboxes.
Michael, you said that about everything. Every song in history.
No, but it kind of empowered me because I find myself to be a kind of a bad musician. I can play piano, I can play guitar, but I have lots of ideas. And seeing Michael Jackson know even less about a musical instrument than me, but like being responsible and also being credited as being an amazing songwriter really pumped me up because like Lionel Richie and Quincy Jones were like, oh, Michael's an amazing songwriter. People are like, oh, Michael's so good, so good. I'm like, dude doesn't even know how to like play any instrument. So that empowered me to not learn any more instruments moving forward. I'm like,
and
I'm
Michael like, probably got handled a lot of those notes on planes too.
So I like that. Also, it was interesting to see which careers, because they were all like top dogs in 1984, whenever the thing was shot. But it was interesting to see like whose careers kind of carried on and have remained at the top and who are sort of like less so. Like, I guess like Cyndi Lauper, like she seemed to be like one of the biggest things in the room. And she's like still a big name, but I think they chose her over Madonna. Like Madonna wasn't there.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay.
It was a debate for a bit in the 80s.
Yeah, in retrospect, it's like Madonna's the bigger thing. So I thought that was interesting.
Cyndi killed it though, I thought. She did a great job, I thought, with her vocal.
Of course. Every
time she winds up. No, I liked it because it was so unique. I you know who I related to a lot? Like just in sort of like, because like when I was in a band or even as a singer, it's like there's people that can like sing, you know, they can go on American Idol or something like that. I was like, I'm like a guy that like can sing with the guitar and I'll do all right in a room. But if you put me against somebody that's going to be on The Voice, I'm going to get demolished.
So Huey.
I related so much to Huey Lewis in that room because he's like, he'd sing his little bit and he'd be fucking flat. And but he knows he's flat and he's dying because he's got Michael Jackson to his right. He's got Cindy Whalen to his left. He just came off Steve Perry and like Daryl Hall. You know, Daryl Hall's like, roo, roo, roo. Like, I think Steve Perry, like outside of Michael Jackson, might have had the best voice in that room. It's the voice that every time it went.
Who?
Steve Perry, the guy from Journey.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Who's like, Bruce Springsteen talk. We didn't even talk about Bruce. Bruce Springsteen talks about Steve Perry's voice. He's like, he's got that great voice, man. He's like, it's like that sandpaper, old Motown thing, whatever. And it's just like, when Huey's like dying in the footage and then in his talking head modern day thing, I was like, oh yeah, that would be the thing where it's like, if you get me in the right moment, I can sound awesome, but it takes me like 10 takes. I don't know. How do you feel? Cause you're a very consistent singer, Max.
No,
you have a unique
voice
as well.
No. I'm not a real singer though. I relate exactly to what you said, Mike. It's like, I can kind of do what I can do, but I've been in sessions with other people that are like real singers. And like on the first take, everything is perfect. I'm like, oh, you're like a real singer.
Yeah.
I did love that Springsteen was a talking head in it and the reverence that the other artists had for Springsteen. Cause Springsteen was sort of at the top of the world there. Like 84 was like his year. And of course he's gone on to be like the biggest thing, like much bigger than Huey Lewis or any other of the rock guys, bigger than Hall & Oates. But it was interesting at that moment in time, people still felt that way about him. My big question, maybe we ended here cause we should all go, is do you think, like, it feels like culture, we're like in a post culture world. Like we're post everything. It's like post advertising, post, like, do you think the idea that this could happen again is conceivable? Like a We Are the World thing. Like Arkells participated in a Canadian version of it in 2010 for Kanon's song, When I Get Older, I Will Be Stronger.
Yeah. Waving flag.
But Waving Flag. That was a big hit in this country.
It was.
Yeah.
But do you think could ever happen again? Yeah. Like on a pop, like on a massive pop culture level. I know they've tried to do other smaller versions, but is there a world where like the biggest 15 artists of the world sing a song? It's almost because we're like, the whole world is like ironic and Gen Zs are so eye-rolly. Like anything that was like kind of done earnestly would just be sort of laughed at, right?
No. I feel like if you're scared into some massive event where everyone's just like, in it together, like the George Floyd thing, like where everyone was just like fucking in on that. And like, if you did if some event like that happened again and there was a song paired with it and you'd look like a total asshole to say, no, I'm not going to be a part of it. I think that would be the perfect formula for 15 biggest artists to get together.
We've seen examples of this. Like for instance, like when the Manchester shooting happened, there's like, they've done big concerts, right? Or there'd have to be some threat or like a earthquake or something on a mass scale that brings them together. But to Max's point, it's like, there's other mechanical things. Like we haven't seen a song written for a group. Like who's the person that writes it? Like Michael Jackson, Lionel Richie writing that song. It seems like everyone fell in line. It's like, oh, it's a Michael Jackson song. We'll do the song. It's like, is it Chris Martin that has to write the anthem? And is like, you know,
it'd have to be Drake and like another Taylor artist. Swift. It'd have to be Drake and Taylor Swift. Like those two,
right?
Like, Taylor Swift is perfect.
Yeah. No, but Taylor Swift wouldn't necessarily get like the hip hop urban side. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think, so it'd have to be Drake and Taylor Swift. If they did it, then everybody else would fall in line. Because they're the two biggest. Maybe Beyonce.
That's the thing.
Or Taylor Swift and Beyonce.
We Are the World thing.
Maybe Jay-Z, Beyonce, Taylor Swift.
Remember when what's that actress's name who started the Imagine All the People Around?
Which was laughed at.
She kind of had her version of that going, which was laughed at, of course. It was like day three of being in our homes playing Xbox.
Oh, man. All right. Well, let's wrap it. But yeah, I think it'd be a unique thing if it came together this day and age, because like you said, there's so much more self-awareness in sort of every aspect of everything we do. And people are scared to look silly.
Yeah. Nuclear threat could be a big thing to bring it together for this.
All right. Well, also, thank you so much for listening. I do want to shout out the whole cast and crew of the St. Bulge's Day special on Crave. Please watch it. We're so grateful because all the guys that played the Bulge's guys, this is a rare thing, but we had real camaraderie. We had real chemistry. And sometimes you don't know with actors, you know, and these guys were awesome. Also, listen, the dessert, they're the best. Isabella Campbell, Jillian Smart. They're killers at everything they do. They're amazing. So I want to give them a huge, huge amount of praise because they are amazing in the show. And we've already talked about him. Former pod guest, Curtis Connor, showed up. knocked it out of the park, fit in with the guys awesomely, and felt like one of the dudes.
Oh my God. Yeah. Everything you just listed, it's like my favorite grouping of people was that cast. I could work with them forever. Like usually there's one bad apple. We've all experienced that, but there was no bad apples on that set.
100%.
So good. So fun. And hopefully we see more bulges coming up.
Okay, that's it. That's all. Thank you so much to official Bulges photographer Nathan Nash putting this whole thing together. Thank you to executive producer St. Bulges Day Special, Ash. Thank you to executive producer, well, Max, I don't need to thank the three of us, our hosts. Thank you to everybody for listening and hopefully watching our show on Crave now. Good hang, guys. Maybe the best.
Ow!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.